This is NBC Nightly News, Thursday, March 20th, with John Chancellor. Tonight, reported by Tom Brokaw from the NBC News Center in New York.
Good evening. North Vietnam's control of South Vietnamese territory continues to expand dramatically, and so far, there is no indication of where or when that takeover will stop. Two South Vietnam provinces fell today, Phu Bon and Binh Long. Yesterday, it was Quang Tri and Tu Tien, site of the imperial capital city of Hue. The loss of Hue was described as a major psychological blow. Earlier this week, three other South Vietnamese provinces were given up, and before that, Phuc Long went over to North Vietnam. Eight provinces, about a fifth of South Vietnam, now are controlled by the North. Hundreds of thousands of refugees are on the roads leading out of the Central Highlands, looking for safety along the coast. Don Oliver has a report on the evacuation of the city of Dalat, which is in the path of the communist forces.
The people of Dalat are piling on buses, lumber trucks, whatever they can find. Even though the roads out of here are sporadically cut off by the communists, and they may not be able to get to Saigon or any other major city where the government still retains control. It is a strange situation, refugees pouring out of the city of Dalat by the thousands. But there is no battle nearby, no sounds of gunfire, no bombs in the distance. The nearest communist troops are said to be at least 50 miles away. The people here are leaving simply because they have heard the rumor that the government will not defend Dalat if the communists attempt to take the city. Throughout this long war, Dalat, 240 miles north of Saigon, has emerged virtually unscathed. It is a mountain resort area, a center of education, and one of the prettiest places in South Vietnam. Beautiful summer homes, many of them owned by high-ranking military officers. The province chief here told the people not to worry. He said there are enough government troops here to defend Dalat, but he didn't say they would defend the city, and that's why the panic. Stores and shops in the central marketplace are shuttered, boarded, and locked. The schools here are all closed now. Anyone with any possessions wants to get them out of Dalat. So these people really don't know where they're moving. They really don't know why they have to leave their homes here. But they are leaving because the government will give them no assurances that this city will not be taken by the communists. Don Oliver, NBC News, Dalat, South Vietnam.
Other South Vietnam provinces are in imminent danger of falling. North Vietnam has three divisions in the field between Saigon and Thai Ninh. Below Saigon, three more divisions are attacking major South Vietnamese military bastions, including Can Tho and the Mekong Delta, the major source of South Vietnam's rice supply. And as David Kohler reports, the mood in Saigon is grim.
The air of emergency that has gripped the provinces reached Saigon today. The American Embassy and other U.S. installations were alerted against the sort of terrorist attacks that injured eight American civilian contract employees on Tuesday. Amid rumors of impending Viet Cong sapper attacks and a possible attempt to overthrow President Nguyen Van Chieu, Army paratroopers were deployed in and around the city. President Chieu's personal bodyguard was doubled, and security police lined the route between the presidential palace and the radio station. In his first broadcast remarks during the current offensive, Chieu categorically denied that populated areas near Hue in the north and Dalat in central Vietnam were being abandoned to the communists. On military fronts here in the south, Viet Cong and North Vietnamese forces stepped up their attacks in Tay Ninh and Long Con provinces. Military analysts here believe that now that the VC and NVA control the central highlands, they will be able to move more troops and equipment against these heavily populated areas. David Kohler, NBC News, South Vietnam.
In Washington, administration spokesmen, including Defense Secretary Schlesinger, are blaming Congress for South Vietnam's losses, but leading congressional Democrats are not impressed. We'll have a report. Still officially, no comment from the White House on that CIA ship, but others connected with the project and Howard Hughes are talking, and we'll have interviews with two of them. And we'll visit this woman once again, Linda Hardy, a cancer victim who wants a home for her children if she dies. The response to her story has been overwhelming. These stories and more news when we continue.
NBC Nightly News is brought to you by Exxon.
America still has a frontier. It's 586,000 square miles of virtually uninhabited wilderness called Alaska. And here today, the largest single construction project ever attempted by private industry is now underway. The Trans-Alaska Pipeline, America's key to 10 billion barrels of American oil. To get the job done, 4,000 pieces of heavy equipment are needed. Enough pipe to stretch all the way from Chicago to New Orleans. More than 16,000 men and women working around the clock in hostile Arctic conditions. Thousands of tons of structural steel. 17 bridges. A fleet of giant aircraft to carry in men and heavy equipment. Enough roadway gravel to bury the island of Manhattan. 400 prefab housing units. Enough food to feed every man, woman, and child in Salt Lake City for 1 month. 360 miles of new roads through frozen tundra and rugged mountains. Exxon Pipeline Company and seven other companies are paying the bill, more than $6 billion. And what will it all add up to? Sometime in 1977, this pipe will carry millions of gallons of vital crude oil each day. A new source of energy for America, from America.
At the White House today, the deteriorating situation in South Vietnam prompted administration spokesmen to launch their own offensive against Congress, which so far has refused to approve President Ford's request for emergency aid to South Vietnam. But in Congress, leading Democrats rejected the blame.
The White House implicitly blamed Congress for communist gains in South Vietnam. To back up his argument, Press Secretary Ron Nessen quoted from a highly unusual source, a North Vietnamese magazine, which indicated that Hanoi's leaders ordered the new offensive after deciding the United States would no longer supply Saigon. On Capitol Hill, Defense Secretary Schlesinger followed the administration line of blaming Congress without actually saying so.
If we had been less niggardly in our funding of South Vietnam, that the position of South Vietnam would be far better today and they would not be forced to make these withdrawals.
Public opinion polls indicate that Americans want to stop aid to South Vietnam. White House spokesman Nessen says President Ford does not base his policy on polls. And Nessen says the new communist offensive actually increases the need for both military and economic help to South Vietnam. Nessen said Congress apparently feels there is no reason to help the thousands of refugees fleeing from communist control. Nessen said maybe Congress has written off South Vietnam, but the president is not. John Cochran, NBC News, the White House.
At the Capitol, there was every sign that Congress has indeed written off South Vietnam. Two senators proposed that all military aid be cut off by July. Senators Mathias and Stevenson went on to say Congress should not be blamed for the collapsing military situation.
The gravity of the situation in South Vietnam requires a high level of statesmanship and not blame casting.
I don't think anyone can say that we have been niggardly or that we have not, in fact, been generous. One of the virtues of this plan is that it redirects the attention of the parties and the attention of the world to the necessity, the ultimate necessity, which in the long run can't be escaped, for a negotiated settlement of this dispute.
Two other senators, Church and Pearson, who've been talking to the White House about a three-year phase-out of military aid to South Vietnam, said today the deteriorating situation there had hurt rather than helped chances for congressional aid. And Senator Javits seemed to sum up the congressional mood: we've had it in Indochina. Ray Scherer, NBC News, at the Capitol.
There's a new Harris poll out today on how people feel about continued military aid to Vietnam. Only 17% favor that, and almost three-quarters of those questioned are opposed to further military aid. Fighting continued today around Phnom Penh, Cambodia, with government troops claiming a small victory against rebels attempting to set up an artillery base just outside the city. But it was not enough to convince the British. They closed their embassy, and they are now preparing to leave the capital.
This is a nuclear power plant in New Jersey. And when it needs fuel to keep itself running, it calls its Exxon dealer. Not the one across town, but this one, clear across the country. Here in the state of Washington, Exxon Nuclear makes fuel for nuclear power plants around the world. The fuel is basically these tiny pellets made from uranium ore. They're placed into these tubes. The tubes are clustered together to form a fuel bundle. And the bundles are shipped in these specially designed containers. Just two deliveries like this can provide enough energy to keep over 40,000 average homes supplied with electricity for four full years. That's a lot of energy. It's efficient energy. But best of all, it's energy that's sitting right under America's lands.
Intelligence officials insisted today that the $350 million project of the CIA, Howard Hughes, and this ship, the Glomar Explorer, was a success. The project attempted to raise a Russian submarine from the place in the Pacific Ocean in which it sank in 1968. A third of the submarine was recovered. That contained the bodies of 70 drowned Russians. The other two-thirds, containing nuclear missiles and code machinery, broke off and fell back into the bottom of the sea. The CIA tried to get news organizations not to tell that story, but it came out anyway. And today, NBC News correspondent Roy Neal talked to a man who had been a crew member aboard the Glomar Explorer. He worked aboard the ship before and after the Pacific Salvage Project, and he talked only on the condition that his name not be used or his face shown.
The former crew member confirmed that the Glomar Explorer had been damaged during recovery operations, but he disagreed with the story that parts of the Russian submarine had been thrown back into the sea.
On the evening, or actually it was the morning of September 20th, 1974, at 3 o'clock in the morning, we rushed to the job site to pull off approximately 25 blue-colored bands. This was done under the curtain of darkness, and there was a great amount of security around when this, when these vans were taken off. It was all under the guise of disseminating these nodules to be refined and to do research on it and determine the mineral content of the nodules. The nodules, when they are taken off the ocean floor, they are put in round 55-gallon drums. They are not put in the bands.
Do you think, in other words, they brought parts of that submarine back with them?
Yes. If you spend millions upon millions of dollars to retrieve a sunken Soviet submarine, and you get it up to ship level from 15,800 feet of water, and you chop it up in little pieces and throw it back in the ocean. Now, doesn't logic and common sense and horse sense tell you that this is a bunch of bunk?
The former crew member said he agreed to this interview so that the real story of the Glomar Explorer won't be covered up. Roy Neal, NBC News, Los Angeles.
A man who used to work for Howard Hughes and is now a fugitive from justice living in Canada insisted today that Hughes was the biggest front the CIA had. The man is John Meyer. Meyer was a lieutenant of Robert Mayhew, once Hughes' chief of operations. Hughes fired Mayhew, claiming that Mayhew had stolen him blind. Mayhew sued Hughes and won. NBC News asked about Hughes' possible link with the CIA, and NBC News was referred to something Mayhew said during the trial of his suit. Quote, "I was asked by Howard Hughes on several occasions to set up covert operations of magnitude with federal agencies in the hope of gaining immunity on other federal charges. Mayhew said he refused." Meyer was much stronger about Hughes when he talked today to Tom Pettit.
John Meyer lives in exile in suburban Vancouver. He is a fugitive from an income tax evasion charge, and he is being sued by Howard Hughes. Meyer worked for Hughes in the 1960s, and he claims another former Hughes employee, Robert Mayhew, was Hughes linked to the CIA with an Ecuador connection.
Yes, Mayhew was the number one contact between Howard Hughes and the CIA. Mike Marriage, who was a CIA agent, was sent to Ecuador to use the Robert A. Mayhew Associates company and the Hughes aircraft company as a front for the CIA and also as a vehicle where the CIA would be involved in the activities of a satellite program for Ecuador. I would say that Howard Hughes was probably the biggest front that the CIA ever had and still has.
John Meyer mysteriously claims to know much more about the CIA and Howard Hughes. A Hughes spokesman said, "We discount Meyer's remarks 100%. This is Tom Pettit, NBC News in Vancouver, British Columbia.
Coincidentally, the Soviet Union has canceled an invitation made to a congressional group. The invitation was for a parliamentary conference in Moscow during the congressional Easter recess. The cancellation came yesterday with the breaking of the Russian submarine story. Moscow hasn't commented at all on that, but a lot of people on Capitol Hill think the cancellation is a direct result of that story.
This has been called the largest peacetime airlift in American history. A massive 24-hour-a-day campaign to penetrate the great Alaskan wilderness and help build the Trans-Alaska oil pipeline. Before pipeline work could begin, huge cargo planes had to fly men, food, and prefab housing units all the way from Fairbanks in central Alaska into the remote construction camps strung along the pipeline route. Before a single section of pipe could be laid, heavy equipment had to be flown in to build the first all-weather highway across northern Alaska. Today, the pipeline highway has been constructed, and the airlift will soon be over. Sometime in 1977, the pipeline itself will be completed. The Alaskan Airlift, it's only part of the largest construction project ever attempted by private industry. Part of a campaign to make America become more self-sufficient.
The Senate late today made rapid progress on its income tax cut and rebate bill. The way it did this was to get out of the way a long-standing dispute on whether to end the oil depletion allowance. And it got the dispute out of the way by settling on a compromise. Catherine Mackin has more on the story.
After 3 days of maneuvering and arguing, late today the Senate took the historic action of ending the oil depletion allowance for major oil companies and limiting it for independent oil producers. The fight to end depletion was led by South Carolina Senator Fritz Hollings. It will mean about $1.7 billion to the U.S. Treasury. The vote came after many hours of wrangling over tax loopholes for big corporations and raising benefits for Social Security recipients. Senator Russell Long, chairman of the Finance Committee, said the Senate was drifting, that it had not yet voted a tax cut for anyone. To end the impasse, Senate Majority Leader Mike Mansfield introduced a new bill. At the same time, Mansfield told the Senate he was concerned about all the money that would be taken out of the federal treasury by the bills being debated. The bill Mansfield proposed would cut 1975 taxes by $30.6 billion, almost double what President Ford asked. At the heart of Mansfield's bill is a tax rebate by May or June to most taxpayers, ranging from $120 to $240, mostly for those in the middle income areas, especially those who earn $16,000 to $20,000 a year. Mansfield also proposed a tax cut aimed mostly at low-income people. Everyone would receive at least $40, but those in the lowest brackets could get as much as $300. Finally, Mansfield proposed that every Social Security recipient get a one-time check of $100. At the rate Congress is moving, President Ford will get his tax cut bill well before Easter, which is what he wants. First, the House and Senate will have to work out their differences, but at this point, that appears to be a fairly easy thing to do. Catherine Mackin, NBC News, Washington.
Some encouraging figures today on the cost of living. It went up 0.6% last month, just as it did in January, and both rises are well below the average monthly rise all last year. The Labor Department also said that retail food prices rose only 0.1% last month, and that's the smallest increase since last July, when food prices fell a little. The federal grand jury investigating the case of Patricia Hearst and the Symbionese Liberation Army today called the father of one of the figures in the case. That figure is Jack Scott, once director of athletics at Oberlin College and a political radical. Scott and his wife reportedly paid the rent on a Pennsylvania farmhouse in which Patricia and three of her allies may have stayed last summer. The grand jury got no cooperation today from Scott's father, John, and Gail Christian has that report.
In San Francisco today, Jack Scott's father, John Scott, was called before the grand jury investigating the SLA. Supposedly, he was subpoenaed to answer questions about his son's involvement with Patricia Hearst and Bill and Emily Harris. Authorities believe the group spent time in Las Vegas, where the senior Scott lives and owns an apartment building. In court, Scott took the Fifth Amendment. He wanted to make a statement after his appearance, but he has a heart condition, so his attorney read his statement.
I cannot help the FBI. I do not have the information they want. I cannot, and I will not, participate in witch hunts against my son or other members of my family.
The FBI has greatly intensified its search here. NBC has learned that the three recently stayed in this apartment building. They were disguised as blacks in dark makeup and wigs. The FBI is circulating pictures of Patricia Hearst in various wigs and hopes that someone here will recognize her.
It's very difficult for a person to cut off completely their prior life. This is one way you catch fugitives. Not the only way, but it's one way you do that. And this is one of the reasons we've continued to concentrate a lot of the investigation here in San Francisco.
Another face has entered the picture, that of Wendy Yoshimura, who may have been with Patricia Hearst in a Pennsylvania hideout. The FBI now feels hers may be the voice on an early SLA tape.
This is Information Intelligence Unit 4.
Rumors are circulating here that the FBI may be close to an arrest. There is also speculation that Patricia Hearst is ready to surrender. But this is certainly not the first time it has been thought this case might come to an end and didn't. Gail Christian, NBC News, San Francisco.
The Food and Drug Administration held a press conference today to talk about a study it has made of something on which Americans spend hundreds of millions of dollars a year. The something is laxatives. And Carol Simpson has a report.
Americans spend almost $300 million a year on laxatives, and according to the Food and Drug Administration, that's too much. After studying the ingredients in 25,000 laxatives and similar drugs, an FDA panel discovered that many of them contained substances that were worthless. The FDA researchers blamed advertising for making Americans too conscious of laxatives. They said most bowel disorders could be corrected by proper diet. At a news conference, the chairman of the FDA panel, which made this study, said he was most concerned about what he called the widespread misuse of laxatives.
We feel, in short, that many individuals are taking laxatives that do not need them. In fact, our panel's opinion is that there are few valid indications for use of a laxative. There are instances where travel, change of habits, a short period of hospitalization, These are instances where constipation does occur and where we feel like a laxative would be indicated.
The panel also reported that one of the dangers of the overuse of laxatives is the fact that they can often cover up the symptoms of serious stomach and bowel disorders. The report warned that no one should take laxatives for longer than a week unless under a doctor's orders. Carol Simpson, NBC News, Washington.
The House passed an emergency one-year farm bill today. Experts said it would cost the government $350 million to support cotton, $50 million for milk, and $70 million for grain. The bill now goes on to the Senate. Secretary of State Kissinger brought some Israeli proposals to Egypt today. Kissinger was several hours behind schedule on his shuttle. He had waited in Jerusalem for the Israeli cabinet to conclude a 10-hour meeting. Robert Sarnoff, chairman of the RCA Corporation, disclosed today that the company has developed, and auto companies now are testing, a tiny electronic device that may boost the gasoline mileage of large and middle-sized cars by 40%. The device is only about a quarter of an inch square. It contains thousands of transistors, and it acts as a miniature computer to adjust automobile chokes and throttles.
You're looking at a valuable piece of real estate. And about 2 years from now, it'll be even more valuable. At this Exxon refinery in Baytown, Texas, Exxon is investing about $500 million as part of our refinery expansion program. Today, Exxon's refineries in the United States are capable of refining 53 million gallons of crude oil per day. But when this expansion program is completed in 1977, Exxon will be able to refine an additional 10 million gallons of crude oil per day. This expanded refining capacity will not eliminate the need for energy conservation. What it will do is make the U.S. less dependent on foreign refineries for the products we need. Exxon. We're expanding our refineries to help meet the needs of our customers in the years to come.
Last week on this program, we presented the story of 32-year-old Linda Hardy, mother of three and cancer victim. Linda Hardy is convinced that she'll die, so she wants to do something for her children, ages 6, 10, and 12. She wants to arrange a home for them so they can continue to live as a family. After she told her story, there was a gratifying response.
Unless I have a miracle, I am going to die. I mean, it's a matter of statistics. And I have three children I love very much, more than anything else in the world. And I want what is ever the very best I can give them. Or if it's someone else, they can give it to them. They want to stay together. That's all I really have to leave them of myself, is each other. Without me, they'll be a family, the three of them together.
These letters are some of the thousands Linda Hardy is receiving containing offers of help. Hundreds of families have written or called offering to fulfill Linda's wish that her children remain together in a home with a strong religious environment after she is gone. The mail and phone calls have carried other messages too, offers for a movie about Linda and offers to pay for exclusive stories and just money that somebody thought would help. Linda is feeling better now after last Thursday's operation to stop the spreading cancer. Family members who heard about Linda's story being told on television and in the newspapers have turned up at her side, some of whom she has not seen for a long time. And the family has hired a lawyer to advise her and to set up a trust fund for her children. Linda, however, remains mostly unchanged by what has happened and happy that people have thought about her.
It just makes you feel so good inside, you know, to think, gosh, you know, there's all these beautiful people in America. You know, it's a nice feeling.
What about the immediate future? What are you going to do? What are you hoping for now?
Well, the immediate future, I hope to go home, feel better, and I hope for a nice, beautiful day, and I hope I can ride my bicycle with the kids again.
I know that's Linda has not decided with whom her children will stay once she is gone, but she hasn't changed her thoughts about that either. I still want them to be happy, she says, and safe, and grow up that way. Bob Jamison, NBC News, Columbus, Ohio.
That's the news for this Thursday evening. I'm Tom Brokaw. Good night for NBC News.